do you raise a reader in the ever-changing world of technology, devices, and other distractions? Screen time may often be more appealing than reading time for a child, but with reading known to be so important, how can a parent encourage kids to make reading a priority? In the new book, How to Raise a Reader, leading book authorities Pamela Paul, who oversees all book coverage at the New York Times, and Maria Russo, editor of the children's books at the Times, answers all these urgent questions and many more. The book is divided into four stages of childhood, from babies to teens, and filled with practical tips, strategies that work, been there, wisdom, and inspirational advice. Again, the name of the book is How to Raise a Reader, and we welcome Maria Russo to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. We had your colleague Pamela on the program a few months ago, and when she was in town and was telling us that this book was coming out. So it's exciting to have you on now that it is out, and we can talk more about it, so because people can actually get their hands on it. How did this particular project come to be between the two of you, a joint project?
Right. Well, the New York Times was putting out a series of guides to life. You can still see them on the site. And one of them that we were asked to do was about raising readers, you know, aimed at parents who want their kids to read books. And so we did it, and it kind of went viral on the site. There was such a great response. And, you know, it just occurred to us, this is actually an urgent issue these days. Parents have a lot of questions. They come up to me everywhere I go with questions, you know, what should my 10-year-old read, or my 9-year-old doesn't like to read, or, you know, why is it okay if my 6-year-old isn't reading yet? You know, there's just a lot of anxiety around it. So we realized a physical book about this subject was really the way to go. And so we kind of hunkered down on the weekends and made it happen. And you know, we wanted to include also lots of lists, lots of recommendations for parents looking for specific books or specific ages or interests, but also just general advice and support, you know, basically all the things you can do to make reading a lifelong habit, because there is stuff you can do.
You know, I certainly understand the point of technology and distractions and the competition that reading has, but I remember this discussion when I was a kid in the 70s. I mean, you know, that people were saying, oh, you know, not people aren't reading as much. It seems like we go through this a lot. And then they were worried that kids were spending too much time watching television.
You know, it's true. You know, I tend to be optimistic that this new age of screens is not going to be all that different. You know, as far as books are still going to exist, books have a strong, strong appeal. And, you know, here's the thing, screens are an issue for parents too, for grown-ups too, all of us. And just like we want a break from all the screens sometimes, and kids do too. And that's what we're finding. Teenagers are actually telling, you know, surveys that they feel oppressed by their phones. They want a break. And so it comes down to, are there books around at that moment that they really want to read? So we're saying, when you have books in the house, you're creating opportunities for your kids to read. And, you know, some of it's just as simple as that. You know, one really interesting study showed that just having books in the home, physical books, is linked to a child becoming a lifelong reader. So that's something everybody can do, you know, whether they come from the library or you can get them cheap at yard sales, tag sales, you know, charity, fundraising, used book events. Lots of schools have those. Keep lots of books around in the home, and then it's more likely your kids are actually going to read them.
The first, say, quarter of this book really is reading to your kids, reading to your baby, reading with a toddler. This is a group sport in the very beginning, and something that really can enhance that love of reading and raising a reader if the child is being read to from as far back as they can remember.
Yeah, I mean, this is what all the research shows, right? Like, children, babies and toddlers need to hear a lot of words. They need the words to be live, coming from a real human being. You know, it's not the same if you just put on, you know, a book on tape or the television. That's not the same. They need physical contact and a human voice. And reading is just a great way to do that, a great way to introduce new words and introduce new concepts. You know, toddlers can take in a lot about the world around them, even though they can't express it themselves yet. They're taking it in when you read to them. And, you know, we also talk about how reading is a wonderful way to create a bond with your baby and your toddler, which isn't easy for a lot of new parents, especially they're, you know, we're tired, right? It's some of us, I was 36 when my first child was born. I didn't have a lot of experience. It was a little bit, you know, unnerving to try. I knew I had to talk to my baby a lot, but I wasn't sure what to say, you know, so I found that reading her a lot of books was a great way just to get a lot of language into her life.
I am interested in something that is written in the chapter, Your Emerging Reader. It's entitled Remember Your Role. Reading at home should be about curiosity, discovery, and exploration. It's great, of course, to support your child while she's learning the mechanics of reading at school, but your most important job is more profound, to foster a love of reading. So leave the lessons to the classroom. Don't put it on yourself to make your child hit particular targets. Your job is to make this a pleasure. And I love that line of your job is to make this a pleasure. So how do you do that? How do you make it a pleasurable experience so that it's not something where the kids are, as they emerge as readers, as the title suggests, that you are just clicking off a box of a book that has been assigned to you, but instead you're reading because you want to read it and because it's fascinating and something that you love.
Yeah, I mean, this is a point that's really striking a chord as we go around the country talking about this book and our ideas. A lot of parents have kind of absorbed the idea that it's their job to, first of all, teach their child how to read and then sort of push them to sort of go up the levels of reading. And that's just not true. It's not a great idea because you're creating pressure. Your child already knows. If your child is in second grade, your child knows what reading group, you know, he's in or she's in. He might feel bad about it. You're not helping by emphasizing that. So what you want to do is not replicate a classroom atmosphere or a classroom approach, but you want to create an environment where your kid can get into that state we call the flow state with reading, right? Where it's motivated intrinsically. It's motivated because the kid wants to read. And, you know, this is actually really hard for parents because it might seem counterintuitive that if you want to help your child do well academically, a really good way to do it is take the pressure off, take the school-based pressure off and help them just become an independent-minded reader, an enthusiastic reader just for fun. And then that's going to translate later to the academic performance. You know, I mean, obviously you want to keep your eye out for signs of potential challenges like dyslexia, even vision problems, you know, really important to make sure that's not in the picture. But if it's not in the picture, your child is going to progress at her own pace. And every child learns to read at a different age. Every child makes leaps that are not regular in their reading skill. And that's not really for you to be in charge of. You know, what you want to do is make it fun, be enthusiastic, support your child's choices. You know, these days, for example, graphic novels, you know, it's just a much more visual experience that kids are having with books now because the publishing industry has realized, you know, first of all, kids love comics. It's a great way to be introduced into reading. It's a great way to support someone just starting out reading. And it's a great way to keep someone reading who just is more visual in general. So, but, you know, a lot of parents will be anti-comics or anti-graphic novels or say, oh, that doesn't count as a real book. No, don't do that. You know, these are great books. These are winning awards. They're literary books.
Right.
Visual reading is reading. So that's just things like this you can do just to keep it fun. You know, today is the pub date for the new Raina Telgemeier book, right? Guts. A lot of parents might know kids love these graphic novels, memoirs of her own childhood. This one's about her anxiety. You know, this is a book that the kids of my colleagues in the office have been bugging me for a month. When can we get it? Can you get it to us early? You know, they're really excited about this book. So if you're a parent, you have, you know, a kid who's you know, 8, 9 years old, like today's a great day to get that book into their hands, you know, because there's a lot of excitement about it.
You talk about this in the book. Is there such a thing as a bad book? And my mother, who was a librarian, her philosophy was, well, you'll know a bad book when you read it.
That's great. And your kid will too. And
well, that's it. You know, she would say, go pick out whatever you want, and then you'll know if you like it or you don't.
That's great. Well, it sounds like she also entrusted you to make decisions for yourself. And it just seems these days that can be hard for a lot of parents who feel the pressure's on, you know, to shape their children's reading life. So, yeah. So, I mean, your grandmother has some good words for the wise there. Just kind of step back and don't judge, because kids are so alert to those signals from their parents of approval and disapproval. They don't need that around reading. What they need these days, especially, is just, you know, enthusiasm and support and, wow, that's cool. You know, and again, and it goes for when they read a book many times over and over and over, right? All parents have had that experience. That's great for them. It's good for their brain, especially for the younger kids. It's good for their brain development. They're getting something different every time. And it's also, we call it comfort books. You know, there's some reason that your child wants to read Dog Man over and over and over again.
Right.
You know, Dog Man is giving your child something, and you need to trust that.
But there are books certainly that have a commercial appeal to them, in the sense that they have a cartoon character, or from, you know, a Marvel movie or something, and there's a tie-in, and they probably aren't, literarily speaking, a good book, but it's still reading, right?
Yeah, we really emphasize that. To be honest, some of the franchised books where they're franchised based on a TV show aren't always the greatest, but it's not that there's inherently something wrong with that. It's more just that they use teams of writers and illustrators to sort of churn them out, so you don't get that same attention, you know, to developing a character and that you can get in a book that's done just for its own sake. So, you know, I think it would be great to, if your child is reading a lot of those, you know, the Peppa Pig picture books, you know, or even the Marvel books later, you know, just keep an eye out and make sure, you know, I mean, actually DC and Marvel are using great children's writers, you know, like Matt De La Pena and, you know, Margie Stoll to rewrite some of the superhero books now with real literary quality to them. So keep an eye out for those too, you know, so these days in some ways, it's getting harder and harder to find a truly terrible book.
Yeah.
Because the publishing industry is realizing there's just such an appetite out there among kids for books, and it's just getting better and better.
I mean, Harry Potter changed a lot, didn't it?
That is true. That was a great moment. And, you know, I think what I'm saying about the increase in quality, some of it is a direct result of what happened with Harry Potter back in the 90s, you know, because that was the first time that children's books became sort of an event, a big public event, a community building thing, right? If you read Harry Potter, you were connected to other kids who were reading Harry Potter. And that feels really good, you know, that to be part of like a community of readers. And that's been happening more and more with other series now too. You know, another thing that we tell parents who are worried about finding the right book for their kids is look for series, especially for the youngest readers, you know, the new readers that, you know, we call them early chapter books. These books are written in series because kids want to read. They read one, they meet the characters, and they want to keep with them. They want to keep going. And that started, you know, that enthusiasm was really brought out by the Harry Potter books. So it's just, no, it's a great thing now that there's besides Harry Potter, you know, there's lots of other communities, you know, the Percy Jackson books for kids who are interested in mythology, that those are fantastic. There's Rick Riordan, the author of the Percy Jackson books, has been became a publisher and is publishing other books that draw from mythological traditions around the world. So it's a little bit more diverse. You know, so we have like Aru Shah, you know, books with traditions from India and Korea and Mexico. So it's really it's pretty exciting for if you're someone who likes that kind of fantasy. What happened after Harry Potter?
You have a lot of picks in here, a lot of different books and suggestions for various groups, whether it be a middle grade reader or young kids or teens. And then in the back, you have this really cool section where you take a look at it by theme. As you call it, more books to love by theme and reading level. And that is gives us a lot of suggestions, a lot there. How did the two of you team up to make such a list?
Well, that was challenging in some ways. I mean, it was exciting and fun, but also, right, we are two different people with two different tastes, you know, so we had to do a lot of horse trading to make these lists. But in the end, I mean, I really feel that having two authors was the best thing for this book because of that, right? I mean, we have different interests and different books that kind of grab our attention. Pamela tends to be more of a fantasy reader, for example, and I just love that realism. I love those family stories. You know, I love picture books. I love early chapter books. So, and you know, and she reads more YA, and you know, so I think it was a good balance between us, and we just kind of went back and forth. But let me tell you, there's so many more I wish I could have put on, but we just betrayed it a lot of the titles.
Which one of you chose The Cricket in Times Square by George Selden?
Oh, that was me. That was me. Yeah. I loved that book as a child. I tell you, you know, now there's some talk about whether there's a one moment in there that's kind of racially insensitive, which makes me sad. And what I would suggest to parents who want to read this book, because it's a great, great book, is to just skip that moment. You know, you see the word coming, a sort of ethnic slur, and just skip it. You know, you don't have to read some of these great old books. You know, they were written at a different time, and you don't have to read them word for word if if they're offensive. But that is a great, great book.
Does a publisher have a responsibility, or should they think about just taking that word out for future publication?
You know, funnily enough, they are debating this in the publishers a lot. I don't know what they're going to decide about a book like that. You know, some people say you should just include an essay or some sort of contextualizing information at the end where you explain it, or at the beginning, so that, you know, kids can see what the world was like and then learn how to think critically about it. And some people say, why expose someone who that's going to hurt to that word? And that little, you know, passage that doesn't feel good. So it's something I think that's still in the process of being debated. You know, I tend to think some of these older books are not really salvageable and really should just be sort of gently moved to the side while we fill our shelves with some of these newer books that, you know, where people of color are the main characters and are not just, you know, on the side looking in all the time or suffering all the time. They're heroes, they're protagonists. So it's an interesting time for kids' book for that reason too, right? That, you know, our country is becoming more diverse and the children's books are too.
Well, the name of the book is How to Raise a Reader, Fostering a Lifelong Love of Books from Birth to Teen. The book is published by Workman. Maria Russo, thank you very much for spending time with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
That was great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is How to Raise a Reader by Pamela Paul and Maria Russo, published by Workman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.